Do you know who was named the best putting mat in 2022 by My Golf Spy? It was the mats from Birdie Ball. It'll help you sink more putts and make more birdies with a Birdie Ball putting green, all in the comfort of your own home. Check out Birdie Ball online at birdieball.com. Birdie Ball is here to make golf more fun and accessible. Find out more at birdieball.com.
It's time for Grilling at the Green. Join Jeff Tracy as he explores the golfing lifestyle and tries to keep it in the short grass for the hackers, dew sweepers, and turf spankers. Here's Jeff.
Just open up the door and let's take good times in. Tomorrow's gonna be better than today.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Grilling at the Green here in Portland and Seattle and in Pennsylvania and in Oklahoma and in Texas and all over the place. I'm JT, and one of the more important things, we're on the Golf News Network on iHeart, and we thank you for listening this week. We'd like to thank the folks at Painted Hills Natural Beef, beef the way nature intended, and also the Oregon Crab Commission from sea to plate. You got to try out their Dungeness crab. I just did a segment with them this morning on TV. It was wonderful. That's one of the perks is I get free crabs. Anyway, this next guest, I've been looking forward to talking to her almost a year now, is Sarah Kemp, LPGA Tour player, and finally found time to spend a little bit of time with us today. She's a very busy woman. And Sarah, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. I was reading your bio like guys like me do and before we prepare for an interview, and you said you credited your athletic ability and your competitiveness and your golf to your parents. We get a lot of that on the show, but, you know, some of them say, well, my mom or my dad or whatever dragged me out to the golf course, and then I took it from there. But you seem pretty close with your parents.
I am, yeah. Similar sort of story, though. They both played when I was younger, and they were both pretty good golfers. Single digits. My dad got close to a scratch handicap, and my mum was on a single digit. So I just went down with them as a kid and just loved it. They would play on the weekend, and I'd kind of just whack around with these little cut-down clubs, and I just loved it. Didn't want to do anything else. And as soon as I was old enough, I was 12 and I could join a club at that time. That's all I wanted to do. So they were definitely a good influence on me. But yeah, they're both super competitive. So I definitely get that from them. Like, we just, like, you know, everything, just the way you're throwing a ball and catching a ball. And I kind of grew up with that competitive nature in the house. But yeah, I get home as much as I can to try and see them still. Or we talk at least every second day. So we still have a nice, close relationship.
Good for you. Good for you. If you guys didn't pick up on this or you don't know, Sarah's from Australia. What part of Australia did you grow up in?
I grew up in Sydney, which is in the state of New South Wales. And when I was about 18, my parents moved about four hour drive north of Sydney in a beautiful little town called Tuncurry. It's right on the beach there, which is great. But yeah, I grew up in the big city of Sydney.
Well, good for you. Sydney is a beautiful, beautiful town. What is one of the first things you had to adapt, adjust, or learn when you came to the States to play golf versus the golf courses in Australia and the courses here in the US?
I had to try and hit the ball a little higher. In Australia, I would say it's, especially on the coast where most people live, it's quite windy. So the course that I grew up playing at was always pretty windy. So I could keep the ball pretty low and there wasn't too much in front of the green. So I could even, you know, land it short and run it up to most golf holes. It was sort of a linksy feel. So as soon as I came to the States, I kind of struggled because being a low ball hitter, the greens are super firm and fast, and you know, there's a lot of tucked pins. So I had to carry the ball and, you know, learn how to hit it a lot higher and generate some more spin. So yeah, I really had to adjust my ball flight really quickly.
Now, see, I fit in perfect in Australia with low ball hitter because I'm not one of those people that sends it, you know, at the apex is 115 feet. Mine's about 15 feet. So I'd fit in really well on that.
You play good in the UK then.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you play good there too.
Yes. Besides what you had to adapt to on the golf courses, what about the living situations? We have different food here. We have different cultural habits. I know from being to Australia a number of times, like we were talking off the air, the Australians are mostly very open and happy people for the most part. So was it easy to adapt for you? Because I know some Americans, when they move to a different country, they don't adapt very well sometimes.
Yeah, I didn't have too much of an issue adapting. It was probably more adapting to being away from, like, so far away from my family. That was, I think, was the tough part. Being pretty close with my parents, and I've got two sisters and five nieces and nephews. It was, I didn't want to that I didn't go to college in the US, so I just sort of packed up and left Australia, and just missing home was probably the hardest thing I had to deal with. But other than that, it was funny. I remember one of my first trips over to the US. There was a couple of things I had to adjust with the way that I spoke. So I remember going to Subway and just getting a sandwich, and I remember I wanted we call what you call peppers, we call capsicum. So I remember saying to the lady, like, can I get some capsicum? And she looked at me like I was absolutely crazy. And then she's like, "What did you just say?" I was like, "Capsicum." And right, the peppers, like, you have green and red, and we all, same thing. And yeah, she just looked at me like I was crazy. She made me say it like five times, and I'm like, "That thing there," like I pointed to. So little things like that had to get with the American lingo versus the Australian lingo. No, honestly, it wasn't too much of a difficult adjustment other than just missing my family.
The one thing that I adapted to very quickly down there was port.
Oh, yeah, I'm
Yeah,
sure.
after dinner and stuff, and they would I adapted. I'm not sure it adapted well to me at times, but I'm pretty sure I adapted very well to it.
Oh, nice.
So you came back, and we've got a couple minutes here, Sarah, and we can pick this up on the other side. You didn't just show up and absolutely make it on tour. Very few people ever do that. Tell us about your journey to make it up to the LPGA tour.
Yeah, I turned professional and I went over to the Ladies European Tour first. And I thought I'd, before I hit the big smoke in America, I thought I'd try my game out there and get a little sort of experience under my belt before I hit the big time. So I spent 2 years on the Ladies European Tour, and I had 2 solid years. I think I finished in the top 20, maybe top 30 on their money list. I didn't win, but had a couple second places and a bunch of top 10s, which is really good. And then I went 2 years later, went to LPGA Q school, and I was really lucky. I remember birdieing at, yeah, they still had the three stages, and the final stage was five rounds, I believe. And I can remember birdieing the last four holes, and I got my LPGA Tour card first go. So
Golf
yeah,
clap, golf clap.
thanks. And yeah, I've been lucky enough to have a card out there ever since. So yeah, it was fun playing in Europe and experiencing a couple years out there. But yeah, it was a good stepping stone to get to the US.
Is it really hard to keep your card?
Yes, it is. Yeah, you need to play some pretty good golf throughout the year. Especially now with the way that the point system works. It's interesting because you can be a really consistent player and finish, 40th every week, and you're probably going to lose your card. Which, you'd make, I'm not sure how much you would end up making, but you need to have a couple of really good finishes throughout the year. So the last couple of years, I've managed to have some top tens, which has really helped. But yeah, it's not an easy feat, keeping your card on the LPGA Tour for sure.
Must be some not just the physical pressure of having to go out, meet some minimum requirements and monetary requirements, but the emotional, the stress must be very difficult at times.
Yes, hugely. I've been talking, it's funny, I was talking to a player today about the anxiety of playing professional golf, and what kind of goes into the beginning of the round and Friday's cut day, and the anxiety on Sunday. It's pressure packed. I play with a lot of people, and I read social media, and they sort of think that a scratch golfer can would be able to make a cut on the LPGA tour. And I just it I kind of shake my head because no one really understands, like, okay, sure, you can go out to your local course on a Saturday with your buddies and shoot six under, but having a 3 footer, that's your livelihood for hundreds of thousands of dollars week in and week out, is it's totally different pressure. So yeah, that part of it, you definitely need some mental strength to be able to play on tour for sure.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with Sarah Kemp from the LPGA right after this. Don't go away.
Hey, everybody. JT here. You know, every week on Grilling at the Green, we bring you a travel tip, and that is brought to you by the Westin Dealerships. I've known those guys since I was a kid, and they have one way of doing business. It's called the Westin Way. It's family oriented, and there's no better people to deal with. Check out Westin Kia on Southeast Stark in Gresham, Oregon.
Welcome back to Grilling at the Green. I'm JT. Today we're talking with Sarah Kemp from the LPGA. Sarah is originally from Australia, if you haven't picked that up already. If you'd like to contact us, pretty easy. Just go to info@grillingatthegreen.com or net. We have both of them, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and all the social media platforms. So I want to talk more with Sarah about playing the game and stuff. But first, we have a little segment every week where my guest gives us a golf travel tip. You travel the world. A lot of people think a golf trip is like flying from Portland to Phoenix or Palm Springs, which is a 2-hour flight, and it's not a big deal. But when you travel for a living and competitively, it's a whole different gambit out there. So Sarah, what would be your golf travel tip for our listeners?
I would put a AirTag. If everyone knows what that is, it's one of those little like tracking devices. I think you can buy them on Apple. And put one of those in your golf bag so you can see exactly where your golf bag is. There's plenty of times, unfortunately, they don't make the flight. But at least when you get to that destination, you can say, okay, they're here, or they didn't make this connection and they're in this airport. But yeah, that's really helped a couple of times when my golf bag hasn't made the flight. So at least I know where they are and I could eventually track them down.
That's a great tip, Sarah. Yeah. That really is. Someday, not on the show, but someday I'll tell you the story about when I flew into Estes Park, Colorado, and I opened up my luggage and it was samples from Victoria's Secret, not my luggage. And if you ever saw me in person, you would know that I would not look good in Victoria's Secret at all. So I had to go out and buy new clothes to go to work the next day. But my suitcases went to Jamaica and then finally caught up with me 4 days later. But anyways, yeah. So that's a great tip. And we'd like to thank the folks at Westin Kia in Gresham, Oregon, for sponsoring that. Westin Kia is the biggest Kia dealer in Oregon. They support a lot of golf events, a lot of my golf events that we support. So we want to thank them for that. We said in the first segment, you came, you made it to Q school and all that, and you were talking about single digit players that maybe think they can go out and be competitive. Lisa and I talked about that when Lisa was on the show, and I said, if you've ever actually gone and watched an LPGA player, they will smoke your butt. But how long did it take you to learn to play the game? Not to play golf, but to learn to play the game at the highest level competitively. There's a difference there.
Oh gosh. I really think the first sort of year out on tour, like you sort of mentioned before, it happens, but it's rare that like players come out and, sort of just are world beaters straight up. It just feels like it takes a little bit of time to get used to your surroundings and, get used to the competition of it. So I would probably say my rookie year was a real big kind of learning curve. And just getting that competition, it's different to, playing for as an amateur, once your that check is now my livelihood,
right.
It's a little different. So it probably took me my whole rookie season to get comfortable with if I don't make a few cuts, am I going to be able to pay my caddy or pay my rent or something like that? So it took probably a year to get comfortable with it.
I would think so. And I would think that there's all the nuances and you guys moving from course to course every week or every couple of weeks. And, each course is different to play, especially competitive. They move the pins on you every day. There's all kinds of those nuances at the highest levels that, like you were saying, the Saturday morning men's club or ladies club people don't think about very much.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's different. It's there's so much more that goes into professional golf. When I was an amateur, I barely sort of, amateurs, good elite golfers do it now, but, working out and stretching and, meditation and all that kind of stuff that goes with it, I never used to really do. But gosh, if I didn't do, everyone's doing it now. Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody. You're losing ground if you're not doing that kind of stuff. So it's not just playing golf. It's so much more of, all aspects of life really affect, us going out on tour and trying to perform at the highest level for sure.
Who was the biggest help to you when you went out on tour? Somebody take you under their wing and say, Sarah, this is what you got to do here. Or, maybe it was travel. Maybe it was playing a specific course. Maybe it was how to deal with rules officials. Watch out for this one. They don't always give you the best ruling. Whatever it was, I'm just giving you hypotheticals. Do you have a couple of mentors out there?
In the beginning, it was nice. When I had first got my card, I remember Kari Webb sent me an email and sort of put her name out there and said that if I never ever needed anything, contact her. And I didn't really take her up on that opportunity because I think she was probably, at the time, my rookie year was, 17 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think she was close to world number one and I was way too intimidated. So I never really took her up on but she was definitely, I don't know whether she knows it now or not, but probably, a little bit of a mentor on the side, although I wish I had asked more questions, but she helped several players, probably too many to name now, but she'd be the standout one. Asking little questions here and there. Some of the older players that are retired now, I can just remember just little weeks here and there, just little questions. But you sort of figure it out. Once being out there and, traveling with some other girls, it helps. I had a coach when I first started. His name was Bill McWilliam. He was my first golf coach. He coached Greg Norman at one point in his career, and he was a really big influence on, he gave me some pointers on, turning pro and, the pressures of how that would impact me getting out there. And I can remember leaning on him a few times when the going got tough. But yeah, quite a few people. I ended up figuring it out in the end.
Oh, good for you. We're going to take another break. We're going to be back with Sarah Kemp from the LPGA and one of my favorite countries in the world, Australia. And we're going to talk more about both of those when we return here on Grilling at the Green.
Hey, everybody, it's JT. I talk about Painted Hills all the time. And we always say beef the way nature intended, but it's more than that because each bite of Painted Hills will make your taste buds explode, put a big, bright smile on your face, and whoever is at your dinner table will have a big, bright smile on their face. And you can thank me for that later. Just go to PaintedHillsBeef.com and find out more. You won't regret it.
Welcome back to Grilling at the Green. We've got Sarah Kemp with us today, and I'm very grateful that we finally found the time. Sarah's a busy lady, And I always am reticent, you know, when you make an ask like this, because time is your money. You know, it's what you were talking about, doing physio and you got to practice and all that. But I'm very grateful that she's here today. We'd like to thank the folks at Painted Hills Natural Beef the way nature intended. Also, Grilla Grills. Experience the versatility of outdoor cooking with their complete line of gas pellet and charcoal grills. If you don't know this, Sarah, I'm a cook on the other stuff that I do.
I heard Lisa told me all about it.
Oh, yeah. She's. We just got done filming some segments for some stations in the Midwest just before I did this show. So that's why I have on TV, I always wear these kind of funky Hawaiian shirts and stuff, you know, so this was a new one about Palm Springs anyway. And also Pig Powder, best on the planet award. Go to pigpowder.com. And in fact, I think you have some pig powder in your house. I think my radio partner Leanne sent Lisa some pig powder a while back. So
nice.
Maybe she snuck that in there. Anyway, we've been talking about being on tour and stuff. Is there the upside must be when you place high or you win a tournament or you make the cut, all those things kind of elevate in increments as you go along. But what's the best, most kind of euphoric time you've had in a competition, or was when the competition was over, that you felt really, really great about?
Oh my gosh, putting me on the spot.
I do that.
It's weird. Probably in the last couple of years, I've really appreciated the good finishes. Like, I think early on in my career, I didn't really, give myself a pat on the back when something, really went well and was proud of myself, I guess. I think other people, were maybe proud at me when I had a good finish, but I never really understood that myself. But yeah, the last couple of years, I've had some good finishes. Actually, my best year was last year on the LPGA. So I can really remember, the finishes. Like last year, I finished fourth in a tournament in Dallas, and I was just really proud of myself. I don't know. It's weird. I can't remember being as proud of myself as I was at any other time. And it was, it was fourth place, but just where I am in my career, I'm sort of at the back end of it. I'm 38. Gosh, I had to think about that for a second. So I'm getting to one of the oldest players out on tour. It's still weird to say that, but probably last year, finishing fourth in Dallas, I was pretty proud of myself. Allowed myself to enjoy it, and probably then, if I can, yeah.
Yeah, sure. You still got a lot of miles left, okay? I watched you play last year. You've got a lot of miles left, kiddo. So if you were my age, then I'd be worried about you. But, I wouldn't do that. What's one of the skills that you in your golf game that, we talked about course changes and stuff versus Australia and coming to the States and high and low ball and stuff, but what's one of your skills that you really have to put the time in on? Short game, you were talking about hitting the ball higher, but when you came to the States and when you went to your first LET event in Europe and you said, man, these girls can fill in the blank, putt, chip, whatever. What was one that you felt you had to really dig down and work on?
I think one of the massive keys to professional golf is, like you said, short game, putting in particular, being good inside 5 feet is pretty huge. And I remember taking that for granted, just sort of walking up and, I would miss a lot of, you kind of walk up and just try and tap in a 3-footer. I still sort of now realize, you got to go through your full routine and, treat it like it's, it's an important putt. It really is. It can be worth thousands of dollars. So, but yeah, just all putting in general, really. I knew that was a moneymaker. And at the end of the day, you can, you know, hit it everywhere, but if you can putt decent, you can manage some kind of score. So I really honed in a lot on my short game, in particular my putting. And I still do that today. Try and work really hard on that, because yeah, if you can, typically some of the best putters out on tour, they're never going to have too bad of a year, because at least they can putt the ball.
Yeah. Were you I guess, lack for a better term, a feel player, or were you a very technical type player? And I ask that because I've seen it both on both the ladies and the men's tours, because the people that have kind of a natural swing and they get out there and they've been doing it since they were a kid like you have, but you can always kind of tell the field players because they always seem to be a touch more relaxed. That's for me sitting in the cheap seats in the press gallery. Okay. Mm-hmm. But you look at that and you just say, yeah, they're a little more fluid. They're like this. And then I see some of the instructors, the teachers, we've gone from kind of a, you know, basic, here's your basic shot, and you progress from there. But now we seem, again, me sitting on the outside, everything is so technical, you know, with TrackMan and all that stuff. And it's like they're getting down to these percentages and fractions, as Faldo says, and all that stuff. How would you say your game overall is, and how do you approach it?
I would definitely be more of a feel player. I get my coach to, I say it to him all the time, can you dumb it down for me? It's like TrackMan. There's probably, I don't know, maybe there's 50 numbers on there, and I bet I understand maybe 13 of them, which I'm totally fine with. So I think I don't really want to understand all of them. I think, like you said, it can get a little, depending on what type of player you are, but it can get a little confusing. So most of the time I'm just like playing like a yardage game on there, and yeah, sending some data to my coach. But yeah, I even get him to sort of show me, physically see what he wants me to do versus, you know, okay, you've got to be in P5 or whatever stuff. I'm like, can you just show me what you want me to do? So yeah, I get him to dumb it down for me, which is, yeah, I've always been sort of a field player. But yes, being technical really works for some people, but it's just, that's not for me.
Yeah. I think, well, you can also see them at driving ranges with their coaches, and now in a lot of these buildings that have simulators in them. Mm-hmm. And they're for fun. I mean, if you're going in there with a group of four or five people and it's a rainy, crummy day and you're just going to play Pebble Beach and you're not worried about it, that's great. But I see some of these guys on there whacking those things, and they're looking at their MOI and their you know, stock portfolio at the same time, and they're doing all this stuff, and it's like, You don't even play that way. I mean, you know, you're not at that. What are you worried about? So, and that's just an observation from me. But I do think we've gotten a little wonky on stuff, is be the proper word. If you were going to give some young lady who's got aspirations to go to the LPGA tour, and maybe they're a pretty good college player or amateur player, what would you tell them?
I wish that I had practiced differently. I wish that I had probably spent like 35% of the percent of the time on my long game and 65% on my short game. I really feel like putting and short game is just everything out on LPGA. You know, I've seen some absolute ball strikers lose their cards, that you should never lose their cards, because, you know, their short game isn't up to scratch. So really hone in on your short game and practice that as much as possible.
I would think. I think short game is the ones that, from an amateur's point of view, that gives you the least amount of positive sensation until it comes into play and you actually chip one in from 10 yards out or something, and then it's everything's great. But yeah, people don't particularly like to practice that. They like to bomb the ball out there, We are going to take another break here. By the way, like I said, we're on all the major podcast platforms, and we're on a bunch of radio stations, and we're on the Golf News Network on iHeart with Ryan Ballingy, and I'm part of his crew now there. And you can follow us all on Facebook and Twitter and all that. So we can do that. Sarah Kemp and I will be back and wrap up this part of the show in just a couple minutes. You're listening to Grilling at the Green.
Hey everybody, JT here. If you need something to practice with in the inclement weather, try Birdie Ball. Go to birdieball.com. Check out the actual Birdie Balls, their packages, their putting greens, which I happen to have a couple of those, and they work great. Birdieball.com.
Welcome back to Grilling at the Green. I'm JT. We'd like to thank Hammerstall Knives and Heritage Cookware. I use them on my TV shows and I recommend them highly. Go to Heritage Steel US and got some great knives and great pots and pans. I know that sounds funny for a golf show, but we all got to eat too. You know, yeah, like that. Sarah's going to stick around. She didn't have a lot of time today, but she's going to stick around a little bit for after hours. So I've saved just a few good questions for her there. And they'll be fun. We'll make her laugh, I promise. What do you think the LPGA Tour is going to be in 5 years? You've been around it a long time now, 16 years or so. Everything that's gone on, Sarah, with live this and this and that. I mean, the whole golf world's kind of topsy-turvy, but what does Sarah Kemp think where the ladies tour will be a few years from now?
Gosh, that's a great question. I don't know. I really don't. I hope in, you know, a stronger place than where it is now. You know, we are continuing to grow. It'd be nice if it was a little bit faster, but it is growing. I honestly don't. I don't really know. I just hope that it's growing, and you know, we can get a bigger fan base and more of a fan base, get more juniors into the game, more junior girls, more women would be great. Having a playing for a little bit more money would be cool too.
I think if they actually allocated you guys some decent TV time, your fan base would grow exponentially.
You're so right. I totally missed that. That would be great. Yeah. TV time, more cameras out. Watching the players this week, I would love to know how many cameras they had out versus, you know, even if we got half the amount, would be cool. I don't even know if we have half.
I think it's some ridiculous amounts there, like 112 or something. I don't know.
We wouldn't even have, I don't know, 20%. It'd be cool to, you're right. That's one of the actually main things. It'd be nice to get some more TV time for sure.
Yeah. And I do like that. Now, when they win a tournament, you know, a guy wins a tournament, it's 1.8, 2.5 million, depending on the tournament, average tournament type thing. But I was really tickled the last couple of years to see some $1 million checks on the LPGA for first place winners. And more of that is coming.
Yeah, I humble brag, my sponsor here, CME, we have I think it's the largest check in women's golf. We had $2 million at the Tour Championship at the end of the year. So that's life-changing. That's so cool. Have a few more of those purses would be awesome.
You win a couple of those, you can fly me down. I'll cook for you and Lisa.
Deal.
Okay, we can do that. And I don't know about you, but Lisa's was a New York strip, medium rare or rare, and Johnny Walker, I think, blue Thank label. God. Yeah.
That's hers.
Yeah, something like that.
I'll take a ribeye medium with a gin and tonic.
I can do all that.
Okay.
I'm a multi-talented kitchen gnome. Something like that. Where do you want to be in 10 years? Sarah, what do you want to do? You said you're on the, I had a guy the other day tell me, he says, well, Jeff, he says, I'm on the 18th tee box of my career. I thought, well, that sounds horrible, but you know, and nobody ever knows when it's time to hang it up until it's time. But where do you want to be 10, 15 years from now?
Oh my gosh, 10 years from now, I would like to, honestly, probably the main thing that comes, first thing that comes to mind, would be nice to be a mum.
Yeah.
It's a little hard. It's you know, I'm 38. I wish, and I've started to play some of the best golf of my career. So it's And I look at the mothers that are out on tour now, and it's so difficult. They deserve medals. I don't know how they do it. There's only a few, and it's, I don't want to really take my kid out on tour. I'd prefer to have, you know, sort of have been done with golf, but it's difficult because, yeah, I'm sort of playing some of the best golf of my career. It's come quite late. So, but yeah, in 10 years, it'd be nice to, be a mum. And yeah, I'd look, you know, be nice to be a tour winner. But you know, just being a good person and a mum and, you know, having fun, just the little things that, you know, really mean the most in life would be cool.
Fun is important.
Yep.
Fun is very, very, very
just
important.
Having a good time, smiling would be cool in 10
yes.
years.
Yes, it would. Sarah Kemp from the LPGA, I thank you. Now you're going to stick around. We got a few minutes after hours. I know your time schedule. So, but I do appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, and maybe we can do it again sometime.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
You got it. We're going to get out of here. We'll be back next week. We're going to be talking all kinds of stuff, shoes and clothes and golf clubs in the coming weeks. We've got a couple of new golf books coming out, and we've got a lot of fascinating stories. So we'll be covering those. So until then, please go out, play some golf, have some fun, and most of all, be kind. Take care, everybody.
Grilling at the Green is produced by JTSD Productions, LLC, in association with Salem Media Group, all rights reserved.